May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be holy and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. Good morning. Ross Gay is a poet, one whom I like quite a bit. I could read just about anything he's published, and I bet it would do the job as a sermon. I bet it would open up your imagination to what is truly possible. I bet it could teach us something about what it means to be human in a world full of joy and sorrow. I am not going to read you one of his poems today, though. You can do that on your own, and I recommend it to you. Today, by which I mean this week as I prepared for today, I've been thinking about something else he wrote. Not a poem, but a word about a poem. Something that we sometimes forget to read at the end of a book, the acknowledgments section, the place where the author gets to say thank you. In one such acknowledgment, Ross Gay names something powerful about the writing process. Nothing I write, he says, I write by myself. Everything I write, by which I mean everything, I write with and for and from others, which is a way of saying always debt, which is a way of saying always gratitude, a way of saying always I am beholden. Everything I write, again, is always debt, always something owed, which is a way of saying it is always gratitude, which is a way of saying always I am beholden. Today, in a similar vein, I would propose, the book of Acts reads, all who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. They had all things in common, it says. They held all things. They held each other. They were held by one another. Always in debt. Always grateful. Always beholden. Now, you might be tempted to say that this is a sentimental picture of an idealistic community, and I would have to say in return, I couldn't agree with you more. For a couple of chapters at the beginning of the church's story, something like kinship took place among the faithful, and it looks and sounds next to impossible. We preachers sometimes gloss over this text. We try to explain away the complications it invites. Now, you see, holding all things in common doesn't literally mean everything. Or it's the spirit of the letter that counts. Or, now practically speaking, such an arrangement obviously wasn't going to work for the church for the long haul. I could have written that sermon today, but I think it's worth sitting with the thing itself, the verses as they are written, before you explain it away. And boy, do we preachers love explaining things away. We love taking the miraculous and making it sensible, the outrageous and making it plausible. Before we do any of that, let's try to take the writer at their word. These verses paint a radical picture of belonging, of giving and receiving, of being perpetually in debt to one another. Such a way of life demands financial investment, of course, but it demands something costlier than that. It demands trust. Trust in people, flawed as we know them to be, flawed as we know ourselves to be. Trust that they will do right by you and that you will do right by them. If it was just writing a check, things might be easier. If it was just about the money, you could settle the contract and move on with your life. But the kind of community that we read about in the book of Acts demands trust. It demands obligation. It demands commitment. And in this world that we live in, this world of the self-made individual in a capitalist economy, we do everything in our power to make sure we don't have to rely on anybody. my bank account, my 401k, my investments, my property. All these things are meant to protect us from harm. They're not bad in and of themselves, you might say, but they also perpetuate the illusion that we do not have to depend on anyone else. Good intentions aside, our technological advances themselves have also made it easier for us to avoid relying on one another. As our virtual world grows, as it makes it ever easier for us to present a polished version of ourselves to the world, as it enables us to vent our rage and resentment at strangers on the internet, we have lost the practice of being with one another. And yet, behind the vitriol and behind the filters, behind the vacation photos that depict a picture-perfect life, we are still human, vulnerable, fragile. We still need to be held and needed, whether we like it or not. We are still beholden to one another. Sometimes it seems to me as though we have forgotten how to do that. We traded the chaos of the public square, the messiness of civic life, for manicured lawns and tall fences. In the process, we forgot how to do life together. Years ago, one of my mentors and college professors, Dave, told me about the nature of the word obligation. I'm pretty sure I was nursing an existential crisis or two at the time, feeling the weight of social expectations, unsure of what my next steps would be after graduation. Dave was trying to remind me of the goodness of certain obligations, of thinking through what my values were, what I was committed to, and letting that be my guide. He reminded me that the word obligation shares a root with the word ligament. Obligation, therefore, doesn't always imply being subservient to someone or something else. It can simply mean being bound, being connected, like a ligament, like a body with many parts that must function together to make a whole. It means being bound up in someone else's well-being. Obligations don't simply tie us down to a prefigured path. They can carry us up into something bigger than ourselves. What we do with that, how we navigate those navigations, those obligations, is what truly matters. That is the large and startling picture before us today in the book of Acts, a community of people who believe in the practice of obligation, messy as it often is, because what it really points to is the practice of belonging. In the beginning of this people we call church, the obligation wasn't a chore or a burden. It was a gift. It was a way of life that challenged the established order of things, a way of being that refused the temptation to retreat into our respective corners. That kind of commitment, of course, requires trust. It requires a way of being in which much is given and much is taken, a perpetual cycle of mutual reliance where it is impossible to keep track of the debts incurred. Friends, this world wants you to be a self-made person. It encourages us to stay in the black, owing nothing to nobody. The gospel, in contrast, invites you to relish being in the red perpetually, to enjoy that constant state of debt that comes with living in lasting community, to be held and to be beholden. So let us remember that we are dependent and that we are vulnerable. Let us rely on one another, for that is what the church is meant to be, a place where we share our gifts and where others' gifts enrich our lives in return. This is a place where our debts to one another can never be repaid. So we have no choice but to remain grateful. Amen.